From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in a restaurant where you are having dinner with your friend. You're in the middle of enjoying the food and the conversation when the server approaches you, looks at your plate, and asks, "You still working on it?" When used in this situation, the phrase "still working on it" is one that might agitate a lover of language. In the words of a local writer, quote, "working." Working is a task, often one that is paid for, like operating a backhoe on a hot day. I've never been paid for eating. If I'm eating and paid for the privilege, it's supposed to be a pleasure, end quote. Why words matter is the subject of a recent blog post by that local writer, our friend and colleague Jeff Spivak. He argues that words should be used with their precise meanings, words like decimate and purr. We'll discuss them in more detail later. Spivak also says that he moves on to new trendy words with caution. One of the most popular of those so-called trendy words is woke. You may know a woke person to be someone who is in tune to the complexities of society, someone who understands how injustice happens. But on a recent appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, lexicographer John McWhorter argued that the meaning of woke is slowly changing and could be unusable in just a decade's time. He says it's already changed, really. So how does that happen? How does the meaning of words evolve over time? And how do seemingly innocuous words or phrases take on entirely new meanings? Can we recognize them fast enough to use them properly? Or am I condemned to being a fuddy-duddy? Is that really what's happening here? Our guest this hour will help us understand. And Jeff Spivak's one of them, a writer, arts and culture contributor for WXXI News, and self-described curmudgeon. We get to both be curmudgeons this hour. It's very exciting.
I'm up for that.
The least curmudgeonly person I know is Maya Abtakian, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Linguistics at the University of Rochester. Nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff, still working on it?
Yeah, flammable and inflammable. They both mean the same thing.
Yes.
Why do we have those two words?
It's redundant, isn't it?
It is.
It's also unnecessary. You see what I just did there? No, it really bothered you, the whole work on it, working on it, huh? It felt out of place, huh?
It's been going on for too long. It's time to move on. What's the other one I heard? Actually, I wrote it down here. I was sitting with some friends for lunch today, and I wrote down a few key things, but sounds good to me. When you order something from a waiter, you know, and it's like, I'm going to eat it. I mean, it may sound good to you, but the whole thing better show up by the time I, you know.
I want to go out to eat with you just to see that you just break down the service staff.
He's a really cranky guy. You know?
No, I think there's something to that. And Maya, you know, at some point, still working on it became a regular, and none of us can sit here and tell you if it was 1964 or 1984, but at some point that became a thing in restaurants. And I wonder, I mean, can we like sort of forensically figure out how words or phrases are actually coming into common usage?
Sort of. I mean, we have some good tools. We have more good tools now. We have things like Google Ngrams, which can give us instances of when it showed up, at least in written literature, and now kind of on the internet and so on. So we do have actually better tools now than we had before. But of course, like you said, most of the time, by the time we notice that a word is new, that means that we're all curmudgeonly about it and it's not new anymore, right? I mean, this has been called the recency illusion by linguists, that by the time we notice some change, it's already happened.
Maya is obviously the authority, and I'm just the guy here.
This is exactly the point that John McWhorter, who is the host of a great podcast on language, he writes on linguistics, and he was on Stephen Colbert's show, and he was talking exactly about this in the word woke. Let's listen.
Woke. I'm not going to tell you when I learned that term, but when I learned it, it was still just the coolest thing. You are woke to the complexities of society and how injustice really happens. It was cool. It smelled like roughly marijuana and lavender. It was that kind of word. And about 2 seconds later, a certain kind of person started sneering, "Oh, is that person woke?" And it's at the point where woke is as in quotation marks in many circles as the word perky. You can't really say that anybody is perky. It's a word. It hasn't been a real word since roughly Bye Bye Birdie. Woke is the same thing. Now, woke is something that people from a certain side of the political spectrum are throwing at other people, the idea being that you're a smug person who thinks that your views are the ones that come from on high. That has happened during the time roughly that a certain person has become president and about 6 months before that. I've found it fascinating. Woke will be all but unusable in 10 years.
John McWhorter.
Isn't it great how nerds are suddenly so cool?
Yes.
Yeah, Maya's going, I've been waiting for this time. This is fantastic. I loved that breakdown of it because I do think that is maybe the best current example of a word. And I think McWhorter is on point there. When you hear woke now, it is sort of used as that sort of subversive, almost a pejorative. Oh, you think you're woke. You know, you've got the moral high ground. Or is that how you kind of take it, Maya?
I don't take it that way.
Oh, you, okay.
I mean, maybe I just haven't paid attention. I still, for me, it still has
take it
that,
earnestly?
Yeah. And I think, actually, it's a really nice example. So I see where you're coming from, Jeff. I mean, the idea that, you know, that decimate used to have this more specific meaning, and now it's widened a lot and sort of losing that specific meaning. But I think actually what woke did was gain specificity, right? I mean, it refers specifically to social justice and to racism and to being aware of those things. It is possible that it has, it drew attention to it. It may be that the word is now doesn't have, or it still has that meaning, but it doesn't have the power that it did.
Sure.
But that happens.
And there's an inevitability there, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
And maybe it's happening with more velocity. Maybe it's happening over 2 or 3 years as opposed to 10 or 20. I don't know. Maybe social media speeds up that velocity?
Maybe. I can't tell yet. I think that some of the words that come in that are new, we just don't pay all that much attention to them, right? So it's the ones that gain that people hang on to for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That get used all the time. They're in every headline. That are, you know, those are the ones that we get sort of sick of. And then there's plenty of other ones. Like, I never even thought about, are you still working on it, as being a new phrase.
It's not like a new phrase, but kind of an annoying phrase.
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't really apply to what you're doing at that moment. Working on food. You know.
And that's why when Maya pointed out decimate that Jeff was writing about, why were you writing about decimate?
Well, we don't really need a word anymore where we're talking about killing 1 out of 10 soldiers, which is where it comes from. The ancient Romans would, in order to keep those 9 guys in line, they'd kill the 10th guy. And that's kind of a discipline that we don't really see anymore, we don't use anymore. And it's become now a word that doesn't mean 1 out of 10 anything anymore. It just means wiping out whatever's in front of you.
Total destruction.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm okay. I hung on to the 1 in 10 for a while. And I've kind of slipped into like, okay, I've got to admit, this has changed. Decimate could, you know, now cover any breadth of disaster.
But this is where I think Professor Abtakian is going to push back on Jeff and me, because I'm the kind of curmudgeon who says, you know, the word awful, you can't say something is awfully good. That's not the way you should be using that term. You will not hear me use the superlative incredible on this program. You will if you're a careful listener to Connections, and now I'm going to put this in your head and you're going to say, Evan, you use this all the time. But I very intentionally use remarkable a lot, because remarkable means it's worthy upon, you know, remarks, as opposed to something being incredible. Or as Robert Duback, a comedian, once said, a salad is not amazing. A salad is nutritious.
How about epic?
Epic, you know. So I try to be precise with language, but Maya, at least in past conversations, you have pushed a little bit more towards letting words breathe and take on new meanings over time, as long as they're commonly understood, right?
Yeah. And I think part of the reason for that is that words are, in a sense, the clothes for language, right? So if you still have the meaning, if you still have the ideas that you're trying to communicate, and the words change their meaning over time, that doesn't mean that anything's happened to the language.
Well, decimate. Are you okay with decimate commonly being used now as totally destroy?
Yes, because as Jeff said, I don't think we have a whole lot of reason for a
like
word
killing
that
one
means
out of 10.
Killing 1 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but Jeff's point is we've got lots of other words for killing everything. We don't have to use decimate.
Oh, we've got, you know, it's like, what do they say about the Eskimos? They have like 50 words for snow. You know, we've got all kinds of words for total annihilation now.
Yeah.
Because that's the world we live in.
I knew you would take the open door to make a political point about our thirst for war. I could always count on you for a political point, Jeff.
It's too obvious, isn't it?
that was low-hanging fruit. Mm. I'm going to read, producer Megan Mack brings this to us, words that have changed over time from Mental Floss, and awful's on there. I'm just going to read this entry here. Ever wonder why awesome means excellent, but awful means really bad when they both derive from awe? In Old English, awe meant fear, terror, or dread. From its use in reference to God, the word came to mean reverential or respectful fear. By the mid-1700s, awe came to mean solemn and reverential wonder, tinged with fear, inspired by the sublime in nature, such as thunder or a storm at sea. That's very specific. Originally, awful and awesome were synonymous, but by the early 19th century, awful absorbed the negative aspects of the emotion, and the word was used to mean frightful or exceedingly bad. The earliest citation in the Oxford English Dictionary for awesome, meaning marvelous, great, stunning, or mind-boggling, is from 1980, the official preppy handbook. So awful and awesome were once synonymous. And Jeff Spivak, that actually makes me sad. Why does that make me sad? How does that make you feel?
I get confused easily. And words like that or condone, which for years I misunderstood. Because con, no, against, you know.
Condone, oh, interesting.
It means the opposite.
It should be prodone.
Yeah, yeah. So I try to listen closely, and I prefixes and things like that, they throw me for a loop now because I'm thinking too hard maybe. So maybe that's the problem, is that I should just kind of go with it and admit that throwing shade is something I should probably be doing right now.
I guess so. Irregardless, let's ask Maya Abtakian. I know everyone listening just cringed at irregardless. when it comes to awesome and awful, I say it sort of makes me sad because it's hard to think of those two words as meaning the same thing. But that's a fascinating little sort of root story there about how the language has changed, I find.
Well, and I think the same is true. I'm not positive, but I think the same is true for terrific and terrible.
I think that's probably right. And that's one of the reasons I try to not use terrific, but maybe I should be more willing to use terrific. I try to use excellent instead of terrific.
I'm pretty sure everybody knows what you mean when you say terrific.
I know,
though.
But amazing is so overdone. Phenomenal is overdone. I mean, phenomenal? Phenomenal should be like reserved for a super high level of quality, shouldn't
you,
it?
Do you really think this hard about these things?
Clearly do. I read your columns.
I labor over those. You're talking extemporaneously.
And Jeff, when you speak for 500 hours a year in live radio, you want to be precise. I do. Actually, this stuff really does matter to me. Oh, boy. Well, okay. So let's do a couple of things here. Professor, you have some notes from your students, don't you?
Oh, I have some new words.
I want to hear these.
Well, they did give me lit, which is one of the ones that you
I mentioned
came
before
up with
before the program that lit was one that kind of trips me up. Lit is, did they give you definitions for them?
Some of them, although I have to admit I can't use any of them in a sentence very well yet.
How many of what percentage of the entries did you know beforehand?
Of this list, maybe 50%.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah. Jeff Spivak would have no chance to get to 50%.
Sorry, what does lit mean again?
Lit means cool, good.
Really good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something awesome.
A lit party.
It could mean awesome or awfully good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. See what I did there?
Oh, yeah.
See what I did? So lit is a good thing.
Yes. Lit's,
a party is lit.
Yep.
A party is awesome.
Yep.
Okay, so there's lit. What else?
They gave me bet.
Bet?
Yep.
B-E-T?
Yep.
What does bet mean?
I think it roughly means I dare you. So you can say you're going to do something and somebody responds bet.
Oh, just the word bet singular.
Yep.
Bet.
I think.
Like a challenge?
Yeah, that's how I took it.
Oh, younger listeners of Connections, we know there are legions of you. We know there are legions of you. I want you to email the program connections@wxxi.org or call us. Most younger listeners do not call. They will text in some form to the program. But call us if you can, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. It'll be lit. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I haven't heard bet, so help us correct some of these if you can, or maybe add some. Bet, all right, what else you got?
Clutch, that one I did know.
Clutch?
Yep, like, that's clutch.
Clutch means like really timely, awesome,
yes.
like needed.
Which I think comes from baseball.
Like you get home, you don't have a six-pack of beer in the fridge, Jeff, but your buddy picked it up and you go, oh, that is clutch. That is so clutch. You would know what that means.
Well,
in that
context. And as you said, baseball, clutch hitting, come on. Yeah.
Which also, by the way, statisticians like Nate Silver pointed out, clutch is not actually
a thing.
Which ruined clutch for you, by the way, in a whole different way. Okay. Professor of Tacking, keep going here. Our phone is lit up, by the way, now. Now the phone is lit in a different way. Go ahead.
Throw shade.
Oh, throw shade. Yeah, I think we all Jeff got throw shade. Said, yeah. Just mean to kind of disparage, right?
Spill the tea.
Spill the tea? What's spill the tea?
Explain.
Gossip or tell the truth about something.
People are using spill the tea? That sounds like something that, no offense, Jeff, your generation would use.
Yeah. Yeah, something my mom would say.
Yeah, not even your generation, older generation. Yeah. Spill the tea. Okay.
Tea
I've
is really
never
bad.
Heard that. Yeah. I've never even heard that. I've never even
no,
heard
I
that.
No, I hadn't either.
Okay, spill the tea.
I'm shook.
Shook, I've definitely, yeah, definitely. In fact, I think I used, when did I use shook recently? I was watching, it was, so I've used shook a couple of times when I'm trying to be cool, if that's the right word. But I've used it watching an athlete who's going to perform and is not clutch, Jeff. Mm. I say, they look shook. Like this, the scene is too big for them.
Yeah.
They look shook. That's what it was. Jared Goff in the Super Bowl. I said to a friend of mine, he looked shook in the first half. Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Okay. Shook.
This is starting to make sense, by the way.
Rattled. Shook. Yeah. Not able to perform. Okay. Anything else there, Professor?
Diving.
Diving.
For faking it from soccer.
Oh, well, a soccer dive. Well, we all know that.
We do? Okay. Mm-hmm.
But if you use it out of the context of the soccer pitch, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. Others?
Well, they talked about a couple. They were I was asking. Actually, what I asked them for was not new words, but things that have gained specificity over time. And one of the things that they gave me was moist.
Oh, that's one that I've been told never to use ever.
Because?
Like the word trousers. And you don't use them together either. But I have read that words moist and trousers are two words that people hate. It just sends off
creepy. There's a creepiness. My old colleague Norma Holland would always told me, you have to write out the word moist in any script. It's just not allowed to be said on the air. And that's what I've been told. So, okay.
So I might regret that.
You might. Let me interrupt for just a second because we've got like 1,000 phone calls. And I'm not a big fan of hyperbole, but it feels like it's about 1,000. So let's just grab a few of those to help us out here. Drew in Rochester wants to tell us what bet means. Yes, go ahead, Drew.
It actually means to dare someone.
To dare, yeah, to dare someone. Okay.
Just like you said. But I got one other thing, too.
Yeah.
How about tight?
Tight. Something is tight. That means really good, well done, well executed.
And it also means you can be upset, too.
Oh, okay. Like uptight.
He was real tight about that situation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, and what about whip? You know what whip is?
Whip. WHIP.
Yep. Yeah.
No. Do I want
educators.
To?
Oh, it's a car.
Whip is a car.
Yes, it is.
Rob Braden, engineer, is nodding. You knew that? A whip is a car. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you hang out with young people and stuff, you kind of like pick up on a lot of the vernacular that they and those words only last with. Believe me, a couple months, and then they on to something new. Just like, what was that word you were talking about? What were you talking about?
Woke, lit, yeah.
Yeah, woke. Well, yeah, woke and lit and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
depends
all.
On what you drive, though, because my car is not whip. It's a Subaru.
It's a what is it?
Yeah, Subaru Forester.
Did you say a hoopty?
Hoopty, right. There you go, hoopty. Right.
That feels like it's old school. That's what I remember growing up. So Drew, if I want to say, if I'm like, hey, thanks for picking me up, that is... Thanks for the ride in your whip, or is whip an adjective? Like, that is one whip ride.
Oh, no, you don't want to say that's a whip ride, no. Whip,
you don't
whip
do that.
Would be an adjective, yeah. You would just say, hey,
so I could say that is one tight whip. That is one tight whip you got.
Oh, well, yeah, you can say that. Yeah, I guess you can say that.
What do you drive, man?
I drive an old car. It's a whip.
Drew, thank you. Great education. Thank you very much for listening and for calling. That was very, very helpful. I've learned so much already. Let's see. 30-year-old Spencer in Penn Yan is going to help us too. Go ahead, Spencer.
So as a 30-year-old, I'm obviously a millennial, but I find myself very curmudgeonly, just like you, about language. And I'm never up on the terms that my generation uses. I did cringe when you said irregardless.
That was for you, man. That was for you and your ilk.
Thank you. Thank you. But I believe the term is if somebody picks you up in their car, they give you a scoop. or they scoop you or something like that.
Okay.
So if they pick you up in their whip, they're giving you a scoop.
Okay.
You know, some of these can be regional.
I don't understand it, but I guess, you know, I pick up on
it. So you feel sort of old school with language sometimes.
I do. And I feel bad because I feel like maybe that makes me a bit of a prescriptivist, but it is what it is.
So you prefer precise meaning. You prefer remarkable instead of incredible.
Exactly. I could really relate to that when you said that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. See?
I like this idea. What was a scoop?
A scoop, yeah.
Because, you know,
thanks for the scoop. Thanks for the ride.
It makes me. I lived in Texas for 3 years, and people say, I'm gonna carry my grandma over to the grocery store. And carry actually means, like, you know, drive her over.
You're going to carry, yeah.
You know, but, you know, I guess a regional thing. So
yeah. Spencer, thank you, and keep up the good fight with the language. I appreciate that. Though Professor Abtakian would probably admonish me not to advise that, because I know, and that actually sounds, I'm starting to actually sound a little bit more uptight about language than I actually am, because I think there's something that's really healthy that has happened, and I'm going to be really specific about public broadcasting as an example. So it used to be, and this is a little bit on language and word usage, and it's also on different sort of dialects, et cetera. It used to be, growing up, and it probably still is to some degree when everything in a society is pretty white-centered, but it used to be that, you know, sounding white was much more of a prescription on the air. Now what you, at least I think, NPR and public broadcasting has done a much better job of, no one, I don't think we're fully there, is recognizing that your voice is your voice. And that's a very healthy thing. We can all improve. Maybe I at least can slow down and speak a little more clearly at times, but we're not telling people to change their voice or necessarily even to sort of scrap language custom. That I think that we are a little more open to understanding that there's all kinds of communication form. How do you feel about that, Professor Abtakian?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we forget when we're just talking about words and how they change is how much the language that you use is a reflection of your identity. And how, I mean, the fact that youth language changes quickly is because youth need new ways of expressing their identity. So I don't know that, and the fact that so many of the things that we're talking about have come from different groups in society, right? We get words from African-American community. Stay woke was around for a long time before it came into wider spread use, right? So that, these are things that are part of who people are. And to suggest that you have to change in order to be a certain type of person, I think is actually pretty detrimental.
A listener tells me that spill the tea just means spill it. Spill it. Tell me. Spill the tea. Spill the tea, Jeff Spivak.
Where does the tea come in? Spill the beer.
Yeah, why is it tea?
Why is it tea?
I don't know. You know what? There's probably a story somewhere.
Maybe it's letter T. Maybe it's truth.
I doubt that.
Okay.
But I like the idea. And you know what? If that works for you, right? If you know what it means. Is that one of the things, Maya, when it comes to communication? As long as people understand communication, that matters more than most other ideas related to it?
I mean, I think the remarkable thing is, for the most part, we have to come to some kind of understanding in order to understand each other, right? I mean, these words gain a common meaning.
Yeah, but don't you sometimes think that it's like, put you in an exclusive club, we're speaking a language here that Evan doesn't get. Got her.
I'm trying to decide whether I see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I could see the moral wheels turning there. You know, I could see it. All right, Paul in Rochester, it wants to lay into everyone who modifies unique. Go ahead, Paul.
That's it, modifying unique and not using an adverb, drive slow. You can't drive slow. You drive slowly. All of the advertising firms, live healthfully. They don't say that. Live healthy, or drives me nuts. And I know driving or modifying unique, I understand, drives you nuts too.
Yes, it does. You cannot modify unique. That's a
exactly.
And this is I'm gonna pin down the professor in the room, and I don't care if people do it. It's not okay. It's not correct.
Right,
professor. Can you modify unique?
I can. I am okay with saying there are different registers that you use in different contexts, but I think even that changes over time, right? I mean, there was a time when you were learning to write, when you had to use whom, And that's not the case anymore in spoken language, I don't think. Do you use it on the radio?
Whom?
Yeah.
It's actually going to sound pretty pedantic, but I think I do when it is the object in a sentence and I'm trying really hard to be correct.
Right. In the right, yeah. So in the right context.
I think I sometimes do.
Okay.
I think I sometimes do. And now I feel actually sort of annoying about it. I feel like I'm becoming really irritating this hour. Is that your fault? I mean, like, is that the Spivak effect?
No. You're not irritating. But we start to sound like third grade teachers at some point here. But you know,
the type who would literally hit you with rulers if you modified unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I could never. When I was put on a spot for those kinds of things, I could never answer those questions anyway. It's too much pressure. Language shouldn't be pressure. It should be beautiful. It should be heartfelt.
Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it ain't.
Well, why shouldn't we strive for beauty?
I think the appreciation of beauty and the encounters with beauty is one of the most fundamentally great things about being alive.
Truth and beauty.
I do.
Truth and beauty.
And that doesn't mean that you should try to encounter it all the time because that dilutes it then. Mm-hmm. But I think the recognition of it, that's why I think language can be beautiful.
It should be beautiful.
Well, sometimes it ain't. We are late for a break, and I have like 9 phone lines lit up. So,
do we get to George Carlin the next half?
I have learned a lot from George Carlin over the years, and is that okay with you?
Yeah,
I figured so. Let's get our only break of the hour. Jeff Spivak, who is a writer and arts and culture contributor for WXXI News, who is routinely decimating. I was going to say something clever, and it just fell right off the page there. Anyway, he's a self-described curmudgeon, but I think he's one of the great writers in our community. And Professor Maya Abtakian, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Linguistics at the University of Rochester. Your many, many phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections. Legalization of marijuana in New York State. There's a lot of debate about it. What would recreational marijuana look like? How would it be sold and where? How might it be taxed? And a lot of opinions on whether it should happen at all. You'll hear all sides first hour. Second hour, a company had a lot of options that chose Rochester for its future. Why? We'll talk about the dynamics that companies face on Friday. Welcome back to Connections. Daniel wants to contest the way we've been using bet. You ready for this? He emails to say, bet is a term that roughly means something like the phrase, you got it, as in you're welcome or anytime. Or maybe you bet. He says, if I'm driving home and you call and ask me to get you a coffee on the way home, I say, sure, you say, thank you, and I could just reply, bet. That's how it's always been used as far as I can recall. I'm curious how many others relate to this understanding of it. Could you toss this one out there and see if there's any agreement? I've heard it used this way for years, but honestly, never heard it as a dare. Well, Daniel, you should have identified your age in that email because I could have helped you and told you just based on the age, if you're right or wrong. If you're my age, you're probably right in the context of when we grew up. But now, probably not. I don't know. It makes sense to me, like you bet, just like bet. I don't know why we take the U out of there. And before I get to your many more phone calls, wow, 9 lines lit up. Maya, do we, a lot of the phone calls, which I think are going to be interesting, are kind of what annoy people at times or what, do we get too annoyed when language changes? Are we too close to like guardians of how we understood language when we were growing up and how we were taught?
Those 9 lines could all be English teachers, by the way, so we could be in really big trouble here. Go ahead.
Are we too closely guarding that?
That is my worry. I mean, my worry is that it just becomes a window for discrimination, for prejudice, right? And I mean, you very few people, writers included, will say, oh, yeah, I do everything that my third grade teacher told me, and I don't have any insecurity about it. I know I use language correctly, right? So I mean, you're talking about all these things that you consciously monitor. It's because this is not something that's part of your vernacular language, right? It's something that you had to learn later. And I think that that is a way then that we can use that as a way of discriminating against other people.
Hmm. Does that move you?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, a comment I made a few moments earlier about the exclusivity of language sometimes does leave me feel left out. And, you know, I'm always eager to show people that I'm a part of the, you know, what we're talking about here. But yeah, I often feel left out and stupid, you know, and I don't know. Is that a bad thing? No.
Stupid because you don't understand new phrases or new
usages? I'm not up to date. I'm not, you know, I'm not involved in the current conversations. I'm not out enough. among people. I used to ride the bus all the time up and down Lake Avenue to and from work. And I was just sitting in the back and listening to the conversations, picking up on all the words of the moment. And I'm not riding the bus these days, but I miss that. I'm not getting that experience
but
anymore.
But I think, Jeff, what I'm hearing from Professor Abtakian is that, you know, you feel a little left out because you're not as sort of
informed
with it, hip to the language.
Ill-informed.
You understand what that means.
Yeah.
Ill-informed. But I think what I'm hearing from the professor as well is we have to be careful with language to say, well, I learned it a certain way, and your way is not correct, especially as a way that is often used.
Judgmental.
Well, and judgmental and often used to target people of different maybe racial backgrounds. Is that kind of where you're going as well?
Yes,
Maya?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we got to be very careful about that too, because when... Look, in Western society, in this country, there's a very much a white standard that sometimes discriminates. Sometimes. People are kind of roll their eyes and say, sometimes, Evan, just sometimes. But yeah, but I also hear what you're saying, is you feel like the language is leaving you in the past a little bit there.
Do you think it's a weapon?
Language?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
To keep, if we're going to start talking about white privilege and things like that, the use of the language... And we're going to exclude slang that could be construed as, you know, being used by minorities.
Yeah, I think that the dialect that we consider, that we think, the language that we think of as being standard language, it's not standard because of any inherent characteristics about it, right? It's standard because of who speaks it. And that's how that dialect, that's why that dialect is considered standard.
All right.
All right. Are you studying and processing?
Yeah, I'm looking for a comeback on this, and I'm agreeing with you, actually. You know, when they used to talk about how television people, they wanted them to sound like they're all from Nebraska and use that kind of language and those kinds of words, and maybe you couldn't get on television unless you sounded like that.
Well, I heard Columbus, Ohio growing up, but same idea.
Yeah, that
same
was
idea.
Actually another one
same
yeah,
idea.
That you heard, yeah.
Which we need to get rid of, by the way.
Is Columbus, Ohio?
No, I don't want to get rid of Columbus, Ohio. Hmm. Maybe some of the plazas and sort of the chain stores, but not the whole city.
Yeah, yeah.
But just this notion that that's the only place where the language is correct is ridiculous.
And I think we are broadening. I don't know if we've quite gotten to the point where language doesn't exclude people, but I do see a lot of... advances. I don't watch enough television to be an authority, but we recently watched The Wire, and I had to go back a lot. And what did that guy just say? Go back. Okay, now I kind of get it, but my ear was not picking up quickly enough on a lot of the language that was being used in some of the black neighborhoods that were featured in that show.
But you're not watching the show thinking they're not speaking correctly. You're thinking I need to just understand.
I was welcoming the opportunity to see and hear this, which when they talk about diversity in television, it's so often they'll take the group from Friends and put a black guy in there for an episode. And it's like, well, that's not really diversity. That's... You know, diversity is like going into a neighborhood where you're not really comfortable, not really speaking the language, and bringing that out there and saying, well, this is a part of our society, too. I lived on the Mexican border for a while, Texas-Mexican border for a while, and welcoming that Texas-Mexican sensibility is something that, you know, is really a part of me right now, and I love that. That whole neighborhood aspect and the mixing of those cultures, which has been now one culture.
This is where I think language really can be beautiful.
Yeah.
Where it's different. And I also welcome any chance to bash the show Friends. And listeners, if that offends you, don't at me. That's a phrase that you would know, Maya? Don't at me?
Yes.
Okay. I think I used that correctly. I'm going to kind of go against typical show format because we've got so many calls. Let's just kind of rip through, and we're going to take a bunch of calls, and then our guests can react. Two of our favorite guests on this program talking about language, how it evolves and changes over time. And let's just kind of go through your many different thoughts on this. And we're going to start with Jennifer in Rochester. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. I have a thought about some of this. There are some phrases that irritate me, but I'm listening to each of you talk, and this reminds me of how judgmental we can all be. I'm glad to hear you brought that up a second ago. But one of the phrases that makes me crazy is the phrase, the way people say me and my, or that just makes me crazy. I think it's part of the idea of putting yourself first as opposed to allowing a matter of politeness to put the other person first, to say my husband and I, or that sort of thing. The other one is, instead of saying where is someone, people saying where is someone at makes me crazy. I don't like that phrasing.
Okay. Jennifer, thank you very much. I appreciate that. There's lots of little things that kind of get in people's heads for a lot of interesting different reasons, by the way. I used to have a lot more until I met Maya, and then she disabused me of some of that. So let's continue down the list here. Wendy and Victor. No, wait a second. This is, I don't know who's on two. Is this Andrew? Is this Andrew in Around a Coin?
Yeah, hey.
Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hey, Professor, what? It could awfully good fall under the category of an idiom of permission.
I don't know what idiom of permission means.
Oh, you don't?
No.
When you say, let's say you broke your arm, right?
Okay.
You fell on the tennis court and you broke your arm. And you come to the show and Evan says, what happened, Professor? And you say, I broke my arm. You didn't break your arm. The asphalt broke your arm. But you're permitted to use, it's an idiom of permission. You would never think of breaking your arm.
The asphalt has no intent. It was just there.
Right, but that's an idiom of permission.
And so what's the original phrase you want to know if it's...
Well, you said you don't like awfully good.
Awfully good, yeah, yeah. Oh, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
She doesn't, you're not a figure of speech person. Oh,
no, well. No, I'm with you. So, Andrew, I'm going to kindly request that everyone follow Andrew and not eat while they call. But, hey, Andrew's a regular, so it's okay. Andrew, I always appreciate the phone call. Awfully good. That's okay with you? Idiom of permission, yes or no?
I think it's fine. I think it's just a shift in the meaning of awfully.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it is acceptable. I don't think it's awfully good to use a phrase.
Okay.
But it doesn't bother you.
No.
Okay, Andrew, we're gonna let it pass, Andrew. Down the list we go, and my goodness, Bill in we've lost Bill in Spencerport. Mike in Brighton next. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, actually, I have a knock knock joke for you.
Okay, I hope I don't regret this. Go ahead.
Knock knock.
Who's there, Mike?
Two.
Two who?
Two. Actually, it's to whom.
Yes.
That's all.
Okay. I love that he waited. It was excellent.
Great
I love
call,
that
Mike.
He
Great
literally
call.
Called and just waited to deliver that. That's fantastic. And we've got people on Twitter telling us their thoughts on who and whom. In fact, telling us that that at times it can seem a little stuffy or elitist to use whom. Andy says whom seems almost too proper these days, almost snobbish. Although I do love its proper usage and specificity. Is it snobbish when you hear whom?
Well, I think that that brings up the point that there are that some of these things stick around for a long time and the people who learn to use them. I mean, I'm pretty sure you didn't learn to use whom natively as a child, right? You probably learned it later in life. So that it does then connect it to education and then it can be seen as snobbish, right? These things that hang on for a lot longer. I mean, whom is basically out of spoken language. It hangs around in very educated contexts.
Okay. Jeff, whom, does it strike you as elitist?
Yeah, it does. I guess I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that. But when I hear it, I wonder why you're using it. Why don't you speak like me?
Because a lot of people would say, because it's correct.
It's correct. Yeah,
that would be what people would say.
It's correct, but it's easing out of common use.
Uh-huh. And is correct the right or wrong word there, Maya? Is that a problem that people would say, well, because it's correct?
Again, I think there's everybody uses language differently in different contexts. I have no problem with that.
It just sounds like masterpiece theater to me. I'm sorry.
Back to your phone calls. Nick in Rochester. Go ahead, Nick.
How's it going, Evan?
Good.
So two things very quickly. One, I think for this discussion, a reference that's crucial is Dr. Christopher Enden's work, and he put out a book called For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood and For the Rest of Y'all Too. And it's a very, very good surface level and even beyond look at how to relate to an inner city culture. and he terms it neo-indigenous. And I think it's very important because it provides a perspective where it's not judgmental, it's just finding common ground. And instead of judging a culture for you perceiving them to not use terminology or language correctly, it's just finding common ground to be able to relate to each other. So we may not use the same dialect, but we can find common ground amongst that dialect. Hmm. And one of my favorite terms is keeping it a buck, meaning you keep it 100%, you're honest, there's no pretense. So by me telling you this, I'm keeping it a buck.
Okay. Yeah, Nick, thank you. So keeping it 100 is a phrase I've heard plenty. Keeping it a buck makes sense to me, but again, probably just because, I don't know, I'm a nerd, I haven't heard that. Maya, have you heard keeping it a buck, keeping it 100, I've heard?
I've heard both.
You have?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It actually, that particular comment also brought up something. When you guys were talking about the beauty of language, another book that I really like is Spoken Soul by Rickford and Rickford that also talks about just the beauty of African-American language and things about the systematicity of it as well.
Yeah, on the subject of beauty, by the way, Jeff Spivak, I would recommend my favorite book on wine ever written by Terry Thees, who's an importer. It's called Reading Between the Vines. And Terry Thees is the kind of guy who can drink 40-year-old Riesling from Germany while wearing a WWF wrestling T-shirt. That's stained.
I may know him.
And I just want you to know that he has some really, I think, powerful and profound things to say about the search for beauty in life in that book.
Okay.
And it's a very short book. I'm just saying that as an aside, not that you need short, though. It's just a thing. Okay. Okay. Back to your...
Thanks. I wrote it down.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you.
Micah says, cupcaking is flirting or snuggling. It's my favorite word introduced to my vernacular during my stay in Oakland, California. I absolutely love it. I've not heard cupcaking that way. Jeff?
No. Help. What is it?
Flirting or snuggling, according to Micah.
From what?
I don't know.
Cupcaking?
Cupcaking.
Professor?
I don't know. I don't know it.
I hadn't heard that either, but apparently that comes... I don't know, from the West Coast. Richard emails the program and says, I'm 73 years old, Evan, and I grok your discomfort, but I don't feel hassled at all. Language change is groovy. Yes, Richard. He just used grok. He used grok beautifully. Jeff, you know
that,
grok,
yeah,
right?
That goes, what, hair?
No, well, what's it come from? I don't know. Yeah,
that era, isn't it? I grok you.
Oh, does that come from the 70s?
I think it's, yeah. Goes back that far, I believe.
But like to grok means to discern, I think, right?
Yeah.
Is that?
I don't know. I've never heard that word before.
It's kind of a hippie thing.
Yeah, but I love that. Maybe Richard is taking us back because he also used hassled and groovy. So maybe he is taking us back to the 70s.
I think that's where we're talking.
But Richard, interesting, because I thought Richard was being cheeky and using a more modern term. Look at me. Everything old is new again. Mm-hmm. I hear grok with some frequency these days. So. To grok, to discern.
Somebody needs to straighten us out on this.
Producer Megan Macwell, she says, understanding something intuitively or by empathy. I grok it. I feel you, man. I grok your discomfort.
Yeah.
Okay? You go. Thank you, Richard. Awesome. I love that. Douglas next on the phone. Go ahead, Douglas.
Hi. At the end of a number of WXXI programs, I hear the phrase, this program cannot be used without the expressed permission of WXXI. And I always felt that instead the word should be express permission without the ED on the end. And what would our experts think?
Express or expressed permission? Express might be an adjective there, Maya. That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, that is a nice example of something that commonly happens in language change where you lose the last consonant of a word.
Hmm.
Or we could just be elusive and just say without the permission of.
Yes.
Yeah, we could.
Different structure.
I think technically, Douglas, you're right. But I think express, you might be able to sell me on it being an adjective that works well there. Thank you for that. Laura says, people erroneously say, I could care less when they mean I couldn't care less. That actually does bother me because you're being, it's not just that you're being imprecise, you're saying the opposite of what you mean. If you could not care less about something and you say, look, man, I could care less. Jeff, you're working for WXXI? I could care less.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Because I listen to commercial radio because I love 6-minute ad blocks.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I prefer.
There was a phrase, I'm trying to come up with a phrase my dad used to say now. It was a double negative kind of a thing. You know, ain't got no. I mean, I hear that a lot. My dad would say it all the time, and I'd say, well, I didn't try to correct him because, you know, he wouldn't listen to anybody. But, you know, things like that, double negatives, I just, not thinking hard enough about the language.
Chaucer used double negatives.
Why? Just to make his point?
No, that was standard language.
Okay, now it is?
Now it's not, but mm-hmm. of course it is in French and Spanish, right?
That is true. It is. The romantic language, it is. Spivak, I want to tell you something. That's why I wanted you on the show with Maya. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met, and every time I think I know something about language, she's here.
How
to
many
tell
languages
me
do you speak?
Linguists hate that question.
Sorry.
Sean in Scottsville next. Go ahead, Sean.
Hi, I just wanted to share that the word grok comes from the Heinlein novel Stranger in a Strange Land.
Stranger in a Strange Land, 1961. Right. Robert Heinlein.
Yep.
Okay, so that's the source. That's the source.
And that was a big book for that hippie crowd, by the way. They love that book. And so that's right. So that's where he's right.
He's not only he right. Richard is right, and you are correct to kind of take us back to the 70s. I actually was wrong in thinking that it was a modern term.
Yeah.
That's interesting. How often do we see that, Maya, in terms of, you know, let's take woke. Woke, I agree with John McWhorter. In 10 years, it'll be basically unusable in the context that we hear it now. Could it come back in a generation or two?
Yes. Either with the same form or maybe with the same meaning. I mean, in the same way that awful and terrible have changed meaning, sometimes the same word just shifts its meaning. And then sometimes we get brand new words.
Oh, so interesting. All right, Steve in Brighton is going to put a little Southern flavor in. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, Evan. As a Southerner living in the North, our accent seems to signal that we're, you know, just a card or two short of a full deck. Now, you may not believe that, but it's true. So I will always stand by for whom, by whom, with whom, okay, and any other proper English. I even use shall sometimes. So I just wanted to pass that on. When I was early in town 30 years ago, I hosted one of the houses for the Landmark Society's house tour. And a woman came up who knew me, and she said, older woman, and she said, well, how are you, Steve? And I said, I'm good, because that's what we say in the South. And she just excoriated me, and you know, in front of other people. You work for the Landmark Society. Don't talk like that. And you know what? I'll never say I'm good again.
Steve, thank you. Actually, Steve brings up, I think, a really good point here. First of all, and I'm not just saying this because Steve is a somewhat intermittent caller to the program. I love his voice. And the highest compliment I give to voices I love that I wish I had as a broadcaster is if we could put your voice in a bottle, we could pour it on pancakes. And Steve is on that list for me. I love the sound of his voice. But I also don't doubt that he has felt some discrimination or at least some the way people size up others in a way that is unfavorable just because he has a Southern accent, which is, of course, unfair. So what he's talking about, Maya, is he's trying to guard against any discrimination he might encounter by using language as, quote-unquote, properly as possible to kind of prevent people. And I'm sure people of color, people who are not, again, sort of white-centered, have to think about that in a way that sort of white northerners don't. You agree?
I agree. Yes, right, exactly. I think that's true.
I find that, I guess, just troubling. I don't know what else to say. I find that sort of sad.
I find it very sad.
I mean, Jeff, is that something you ever thought about?
Well, as a guy who did live in Texas for 3 years and I still use some of those words, y'all. I like y'all. Covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, I like y'all.
I do get the sense that, and particularly people who have lived in the South for a long time, I've heard it expressed. Yeah, there is some. I don't know if I would go as far as judgment being cast based on your regionality, and we wouldn't do that in other circumstances. Why would we do it the way you speak?
Well, I think to some degree now, and I'm going to make an observation. I think some of it's political divide because right now in this country, southern states tend to vote as a political block. Northeastern states vote as more of a political block. And so it becomes an either a damn Yankee versus, you know, dumb southerner sort of thing, which is really unfortunate and unfair. And frankly, as a northerner, I'm a big fan of the southern accent because I like the idea, and this is a stereotype, of slowing down and feeling like life isn't always in a hurry. And that's what I associate with the South, and I actually have a lot of affinity for that. So, Steve, thank you. So, Maya, so some final thoughts. Can we kind of see it happening in motion language when it's changing, or is it sort of just it kind of takes on a life of its own? Because there's not one person who's driving the change.
No, I mean, some of the changes we notice. I mean, we listed a bunch of things that we've noticed, and then some of them we don't notice when they're going on, right? I mean, at some point, people went from saying, like you, green beans, to do you like green beans? And nobody's commenting on how they don't like due support, right? So some of these changes just happen, and people don't pay a lot of attention. I'm sure at the time people paid more attention to it, but
when
they're
you
not
notice
now,
them,
right?
Do you love it when you notice a change or a,
yes,
sort of
that's
a new
why
usage?
Yes. Yes.
I imagine for a linguist like that. And Jeff, I learned a lot of new phrases and words this hour.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you.
And you were doubting coming on this program. Do you grok now why I wanted this? Are you grokking it?
I'm just a fan. I'm not an authority like a professor, but
no,
I'm a fan.
No, I think you're... You don't have to claim authority, but I love your work, and we're glad to have you working with us at WXXI. Thank you, Jeff Spivak.
Thanks.
A lot of fun. And Professor of Linguistics at the University of Rochester, Maya Abtakian, always great learning from you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections, and Megan Mack is the producer. I wish I could think of something clever to say, but I'm just going to say have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.